about the word safety, and I was trying to think of the first time I have ever felt safe. And I would just, all I was assumed by when I was a kid, I was like your safety kid. Like, if there was a storm, I was your safety prep person. I was packing, making sure that we had enough meals for a week.
If we lost power, if there was a natural disaster, I was the kid that always got up out of bed, making sure that the oven was fully off. I was as well the one that checked all the locks before even going to bed. I was the person that just made safety. When I went out with my friends, they always knew that, like, I always had an exit safety strategy. I always knew where the exits were in any public place. And then I was realizing, I was like, wow, there was this lack of security as a kid. I was like, I just had never felt safe. And so I was sitting and pondering, where was the first time I ever felt safe? And of course, like, I felt safe when I was in the presence of, like, a parent, but I was like, outside of my parent, where did I feel safe? Like, what was that space for me? And then it hit me out of nowhere. And I remember it was actually in a public place, a room full with people. And I walked in and I remember I just felt immediately loved and safe. And I was protected by the people that were around me. And it was the first time I had ever walked into youth group. And I remember I was like, there's something different about these people. I was like, there's something so different. I would walk around them and like usually I had like I was anxious around people and I was like, oh my gosh, like there's so many new people. I have to get to know everyone. But there was none of that. I would walk in and I could be myself. And I was fully known and just loved when I walked into that room. And I was like, what is the difference about these people? And I didn't know Christ at the time. And then I realized as I'd been hearing the gospel more and more each and every week, that it was Jesus shining through them of why I felt safe. That Jesus was the safe space for me. And it was Jesus being seen through them why I felt safe. So this week we're going to be in John chapter 6. And we're wrapping up our series. The Bible in front of you, I have the page is 865. And that is John 6. And so first it starts out with the feeding of the 5,000. Just to backtrack a little bit of what Pastor Jeff talked about last week, he was in John 5, and we had been traveling, so we were in John 4, John 5, now we're in John 6. And so we were in John 5, we just seen some amazing miracles happen. After the man was healed, that was not able to walk, he was healed, he walked away, and then Jesus is having a conversation with the religious leaders. And they're going back and forth, and they wanted him to fit into this perfect image. And Jesus is like, but their scope of what they wanted Jesus to be, he was going to be so much more. He was going to be so much more. And so now we're back. So then he got away from them, and he's walking away, and then he had this crowd following him. This crowd has been seeing miracle after miracle, and they just wanted to know more of what Jesus was about. Okay, so we're going to start. There we go. So John 6. Sometimes after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee. This is the Sea of Tiberias. And the great crowd of people followed him because they saw the signs that he had performed by healing the sick. Then Jesus went up onto the mountainside, sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover festivities was near. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming towards him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he had already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, "It would take more than a half a year's wages to buy enough bread just for each one to have a bite." Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. "Here is a boy with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. How far will they go among so many?" Jesus said, "Have these people sit down." And there was plenty of grass in that place. And they sat down, and about 5,000 men were there. Jesus took the loaves and gave thanks and distributed to them who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. When they had all had enough to eat, he said to the disciples, "Gather the pieces that are left over and let nothing be wasted." So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with pieces of 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. After the people saw the signs Jesus performed, they began to say, surely this is the prophet who is to come into the world. Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to the mountain by himself. We're going to pause right there. So Jesus is going about with the disciples. They just had these amazing things. He crossed over to the Galilee, and there was this crowd following them. And you see, Jesus was like going to the mountainside to kind of be alone with his followers. Like he was going to be alone. And then they end up following him. And he doesn't say, be gone from me. He straight up says, let's serve them with compassion. Let's serve them with compassion. They wanted to get to know his character more because of everything that they already had seen. For a man that never had an address, nor a place to really call home, a bed that he would go and lay down in the same bed every night, he was the most hospitable man that you had ever seen. He fed 5,000 people. If you had 5,000 people show up to your house, would you be like, all right, let's figure this out. Let me start like, how much is this going to cost? And like, I would start panicking. But it says that it was 5,000 people. This is 5,000 people plus because it was only the men. That's not included in the number of the amount of children and women that were there that day. So he says to the disciple, what are we going to do? Jesus makes the disciples see the need that's in front of them. He makes them aware that there is a need and that he makes the people that he's doing life and ministry with, that there is a need that needs to be met here. Oftentimes when we see a need that's met, it's like, I'm not good enough to do this. I'm supposed to do this? No, I can't do this. How many times you run away, it's like, oh, that would be a really good idea. You should go and do that. Not, I'm gonna go and do that. A lot of times we're really good at like mentioning, oh, this is like something that needs to be done. But I don't think I'm the person that's supposed to do it. No, Jesus is like, what are we going to do about this? Philip, what are we going to do this? He's pointing out the need to them, that this is a need that needs to be met. And so they had been watching him do miracle after miracle, and he shows the worldly view of what it would have been. He asked Philip, and he goes, how much would it cost us? And then he gives us the number. And they were still like, what are we going to do? When Jesus already knew what he was going to do. He already had a plan set out for this, for that time. And he just wanted to bring the perspective and bring and show them that there's this need and we're going to fill it, but God's going to be part of it. So he asked Philip, and Philip does the math. Philip was kind of like that business person. They each had a job, so Philip crunched the numbers. They looked at the small ways of how this could happen. They were like, okay, we'll break this up into, they were looking at the small things. And I think so often in life, we can look at the very small things and get so caught up that there's nothing more. This is what it is. There's no possible way. But if you're looking at God and seeing the ways that he can fulfill it, that is greater and bigger than it can ever be. So then Andrew goes, well, there's this boy. And this is all that he has to offer. And he wants to offer it up and share it with every person. And I'm just thinking the cuteness of like a little boy just coming up and like, here's my lunch. Like, hopefully this could help. But he was giving this little amount. And it says that it was 2 fish and 5 barley rolls. So I want you to close your eyes and imagine. When they say a 2 fish, it's literally meaning 2 sardines. 2 sardines. That's what they mean by fish. It's a poor man's meal. And like maybe smaller than 5 dinner rolls. That's all that he had. This was probably this little boy's lunch. But yet, Jesus took those small things and made it bigger to serve the bigger need that was in front of them. So Jesus took this. And when they say a little boy, this means this little boy wasn't even 13. In the Jewish society, when they would say men, that meant someone that was 13 plus. So this means that this boy wasn't even that, and he wasn't even counted in the 5,000. He was less than to not even be counted in the people that were there. And yet he gave to be part of what Jesus was doing. He gave sacrificially to Jesus to meet the needs that were in front of him. And so Jesus gave thanks and gave thanks for what was here. And if I was sitting there, I'd be like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? And that's what the disciples are like. Okay, they gave thanks and they had enough to feed 5,000 people plus the women and children that were there. So after, in verse 14, the people saw the sign that Jesus had performed, and they began to say, surely this is the prophet who has come to the world. And Jesus, knowing that they were intended to come and make him king by force. So the crowd was coming, and they were just so focused on what he just did for them that he multiplied. And it said that they had enough, that they were full. So imagine taking only 2 fish and 5 loaves, and that they were completely full, and they had leftovers. This was surely a miracle. And so they're like, oh my gosh, he just multiplied food? So they were so focused, and they're like, you're surely king. But it wasn't his time yet. He had an eternal perspective. They wanted him to be king. The religious leaders wanted to fit him in and be a political leader. They were like, oh, surely if you were the Messiah, you're like this. They're boxing him into this view. But yet Jesus had a bigger focus. He had bigger things. His ministry was of compassion. He wanted to love people. He showed every ounce of the fruits of the Spirit to these people. He saw the big need and he fed them what they needed, and there was so much more to come. So then he draws away from them. See, he wanted to show his characteristics of who he was and show them that he was a person that had compassion and was safe for them, but this safety was going to be eternal and not just for that moment. There was so much more. Jesus empowered the disciples to be the hands and feet of hospitality. He showed them how to serve, and how to serve even when they were tired and they had been going on this journey. And so then they draw away. And I love that Jesus is modeling this time of rest, because we're about to see that Jesus is pulling away. It said that he went away. And he's modeling, after you serve, you go and take some time of rest. He's not saying, go, 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 go. No, he's saying, take your time of rest and replenish. He was getting away so that he could be more purposeful after. Last week, 2 weeks ago, I ran the Nyack 10 miler. And that was the most roughest thing I've ever done. I'm not going to lie to you. Running a race is no joke. If you are a runner out there, I respect you so much. I tried to be a runner. I'm trying to be a runner. So I did the Nyack 10 miler, and I started running. And I ran this with my friends. And I did it with a few of my friends around me. And as I was going, I was just like, all right, I'm going to do this. So I'm running. I'm going along the race. I get to about mile 7. And then I'm like running in the street, so I go to like get onto the sidewalk to be safe. And I ended up like, I don't know what I did, but one part of my ankle rolled, the other part like went straight, and I just did not like end right on this onto the sidewalk. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm not sitting there, I'm continuing to run, and I'm extremely in pain. And I just start to feel these tears just run down my face, and I'm like, oh my gosh, did I hurt myself? So I continue to go, trying to assess what's wrong. And I'm just like, okay, I need to stop. Like, I'm in danger zone. Like, I might have hurt myself. Like, I need to stop. So I continue to go. I'm walking with my friends. I get, and I get to about mile 8, and I was like, and a lot of them had suggested I stopped, and I'm fighting them. Like, no, if I stop now, then I'm not going to be able. I need to stay with momentum. And so I'm sitting there, I'm sad, I'm like feeling defeated, and I was just trying to assess the damage, and my friend just came over and took off my shoe without like hesitation and just started serving my need and just started like massaging my foot, like rubbing my ankle, and just loving me so well, loving me with compassion and being the hands and feet of Jesus. First off, I had been running for 7 miles. My feet probably stunk. But at the same time, she saw the need. She came and filled it. She was the hands and feet. She was showing me love and compassion, just like Jesus did. And she loved me so much that even when I was hurt, she made that a space that I felt safe, that I felt loved, that I was watered and I was seen, and that need was seen, and she met it. So we're gonna go back into the passage. We're in John 6, verse 16. And it says, "When the evening came, his disciples went down to the lake, where they got into the boat and they set off across the lake for Capernaum. By now it was dark. Jesus had not yet joined them. A strong wind was blowing, and the waters were grown rough. And when they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus approaching in the boat and walking on the water. They were frightened, but he said to them, 'It is I, do not be afraid.' And then they were willing to take him into the boat. Immediately the boat reached shore where they were headed." So if you put yourself in that boat, I honestly could not imagine. I, for the past few days, had been you had watched Jesus done these miracles. You had watched him do these miracles. He just had fed the 5,000. You got on the boat. They're probably been a little tired. They're seeing these crazy things and these crazy, amazing things. People are being healed. People are being fed. Needs are being met. And then you get in the boat and you're waiting for Jesus. And then a storm starts to brew. Now, it says that it was rough out there. So that means that the waves are like knocking into the boat. It's probably splashing over. It's dark because it's at nightfall. And if there's a storm, there's most likely no moonlight at all. And it's not like they had a flashlight or anything. Most likely if the wind's blowing like that, then a candle couldn't stay in. And they're around water, so there's no light at all. They're in the dark, and they're like, "We're alone. Like, we're gonna die out here." And then they see Jesus walking on the water. And in other accounts, it says that, if you look in Matthew 14, you can go and read it later, but it says that Peter was in the boat, and he asked Jesus to, he said, "Jesus, if that is you, invite me upon the waves." God shows up in the middle of the storm. And so if he calls Peter out on the waves in this other account, and then Peter is like walking upon the water, and he starts to sink. And then Jesus pulls him up and brings him back, and they just go back in the boat. First off, if that was Peter's boldness to ask Jesus to invite him upon the waves, the boldness to ask that and to trust someone to walk upon the water with them is amazing. But then he starts to feel the wind and waves, and it takes him in. You see, Peter is actually a fisherman. And also on that boat is his brother Andrew, most likely, who also was a fisherman. So he grew up on the waves. He probably has been through a storm on a boat before. He's been on rough waters. He knows. And then he sees Jesus walking, and he had watched Jesus do all these miracles, but he still doubted because he saw the situation that was around him, and he started to see, and it started to swallow him up. But you see, Jesus didn't be like, "Nah, you're good. Like, I'll just let you go. You doubted. Oh, well, you're done." No, Jesus straight up put his hand down and pulled him back up, and they both got back in the boat. When Jesus calls us to do something, he never just leaves us there. He comes into it with us. Don't tell God how big your storm is. Tell your storm how big your God is. And that is by Mark Luden. Oftentimes, we allow the storms of life to have the power over us and take our eyes off of Jesus. when we need to put our eyes back on Jesus so we don't start sinking. It said that the water was up to Peter's knees. Pastor Jeff has a saying that he says, Jesus walked with us knee deep in whatever crap you find yourself in. See, Jesus' character is to calm the waves in the midst of the storm. That is his character. That is who Jesus is, that he will be the safe place in the midst of the craziness, in the midst of the situation that you see that there is no end and there is no way. Jesus will show up and calm the storms of life. He sees us, he invites us, and he doesn't leave us. He's in the thick of it with us. I kind of seen this happen in my own life a few weeks ago. A few weeks ago, I've been deciding that I'm going to face some fears of mine. And I decided that whenever someone challenges me kind of to do something, not really challenge me, but like invite me to do something, and I'm like, my reaction is most likely, no, I've done that, I really don't like it, I'm going to retry it, because a lot of times I just let fear stop me. And I've been reading this book by Michelle Poehler that says, Hello Fear. And so a friend had invited me to come with her to do an activity. And so I started with her, and I got myself up 50 feet up in the air and pretty much stuck and frozen up there. And to kind of frame what I was doing, I was going rock climbing, and I was 50 feet up in the air. I was in a harness, but I was frozen at the top of a rock wall. And I'm sitting up at the top, and I was like, all right, I'm just going to prepare my life up here because I do not want to let go and fall. And to put it in perspective, so I'm harnessed in, and there's an auto belay. An auto belay is basically like when you let go and fall, it will like gradually help you bring down to the thing. But you see, I'm watching all these little 5-year-olds, 7-year-olds that are around me. It was a Saturday afternoon, and they're all like climbing up, going really fast. So I slowly got to the top, and then I stand there, and I'm like, I don't want to fall. I was just like, sure, I'm watching all these little tiny kids go to the bottom, but how do I know that this thing is going to keep me safe? That I'm not actually just going to step off and just splat to the ground? Like, how do I know this is actually going to catch me and it's going to keep me safe? It's not going to allow me to die. I could just plummet to death. So this is all my thoughts, and I'm sitting there fearful, and I look down at my friend. I'm like, I can't do it. And she goes, huh? I was like, I'm not doing it. I'm going to live up here. It's okay. I'm fine. And I had a teenage, 16-year-old boy that worked there. He was like, do you want me to come up and get you? And I'm like, no, like not happening. So I already started planning my life up there. And she just looks at me and she goes, just let go and fall. And I looked at her crazy. I was like, no. And so I sat there and I just was like, okay, Mary, you can't live up here. And the next step is most likely that the fire department will have to come and get you down, and that's embarrassing. So she was like, just sit in a chair and fall. And so I just leaned back and fell. Thank God the auto belay did its job and slowly, gradually brought me down to the ground. But you guys, I didn't trust it enough that it was going to catch me and keep me safe. And how often is that with Jesus? Because we can't see him, because we haven't seen something in a while been done in our life, we don't trust him that he's going to keep us safe. That he's going to be there and make sure he's safe. That he's actually in it with us, and that he's going to show up and keep us safe. A lot of times, I feel we can do that. We just get so caught up that this is just my storm. This is what it's going to be. And this is how it's going to end. And I'm here to tell you that Jesus is trustworthy. That if you lean back and fall, he's going to catch you. This past week, I took a moment, and I thought of the word safety and how it means different things. How if you look at the level of safety that the president gets in protection, he has a lot of safety around him. He has Secret Service men, they keep him safe. You most likely don't have that when you walk out every morning of your house, right? No? Also, there's a certain level of safety that you have when you go to the bank. There's a different level of safety when you put your money in the bank or when you put your money in a piggy bank. There's different levels of security. But in Jesus, he gives us the same amount of security in each and every one of us. He's not going to give one person more safety than the other. He guarantees eternal safety. He's always going to show up and give us eternal safety because we are his children. That's why he sent his, that's why God sent his one and only son to die for us so we can have that safety in him. And then if you call yourself a believer, that safety is to be shined through and to seen to others, to give to others. It's not that person is safe. You're most likely seeing, well, that person is safe, but you're most likely seeing this Jesus in them, in their characteristics. You might have certain friends that you're like, no, that's a really safe person. But you're most likely seeing Jesus' characteristics in them. They're most likely loving, peaceful, joy. They have all the fruits of the Spirit in them. And that's the safety characteristic you're seeing. You're seeing Jesus shine through them. So Jesus' ultimate call is to be the safe place for you. He ultimately died so that he could be the safe place for you and me. And my question is, have you trusted him to give you that safety, to be that safe space for you? So my question to you is, have you trusted Jesus to be your safe space? So my first close is, Jesus empowers you to be hospitable, but how can you serve with compassion? God can be trusted, but where are you being asked to trust him more? And this week, maybe there's something that has been really heavy on you. You really don't know what way or way it's going to happen. Maybe it's a financial situation. Maybe it's a situation at work. Maybe it's a friend situation. I don't know what it is. But know that God sees it, and he's in it with you. But you might need to take that step and trust him with it. And so I'm asking you today, take that step. See what he will do in it, because he'll end up being in it. He wants to be in it, but he's just waiting to be invited into it. What are your 2 fishes and 5 loaves of bread that you might need to be offering to Jesus this week? So I'm going to pray and close this out. Holy Spirit, I just pray that you come right now. God, you are an abundant God. You took 2 fishes and five barley loaves and fed 5,000 plus people. So why wouldn't you do it for us? So God, I pray this week that you would show up for each and every person that is sitting in this room right now and every person that is watching online and that's here right now. And we pray, Lord God, that you just exceed their expectation. But I pray that we can have heavenly expectation. That you would take the small things and do more than we could ever imagine for. So God, I just pray that you would just show up this week. I pray if we haven't felt seen in a really long time by you, that we would feel seen today and for the rest of this week. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.